Ladies and gentlemen, it's been 15 minutes since I talked to you last, although we're continuously transcribing this for you, and the fire is still burning out on the field. It is dark now, almost dark, and the masses of flame are still leaping from the wreckage. Now, an American Airlines flagship just took off with 21 passengers on board and the stewardess and crew of two. Now, the stewardess is a registered nurse. She has a first aid kit on board the plane, and they have injured in it, rushing them to New York for aid. Now, how many are on board, I don't know, but we have received that 15 out of 16 so far are living. 15 out of 16, and also, I want to mention something else here, too, that some of the crew have been able to get out. Now, there's an officer, a German officer here, speaking to men of his own race, and I cannot understand him, and I'm not going to interrupt him to bother him. But the United States Navy, now let me make a mention here of the United States Navy and what they are doing in this crisis. I never have seen such a smoothly working, systematized action in my life. The men have rushed out there with their firefighting apparatus, had the survivors in the cars and rushed to the hospital before I had time to run down after talking to you to get into the wreckage. Commander Charles Rosendahl, the great commander of the United States Navy, is out there directing all activities. He's doing a man-sized job for the man that he is, and our credit goes to him. We take off our hat to him. And those sailors and the Marines and the regular Army men and the pilots of both Army and Navy who have flown in here are out there doing their darndest to get the people out of the wreckage. They're still taking people out. Some of them are badly injured. A number of them are dead. Now, we told you there are approximately 106 on board, and so far we have only known of about 25 safely getting away from the wreckage, and we are sure of about 16. Now, if we are going to broadcast any longer here, I'm going to have to step over to the window where the mass of wreckage is still burning out there. To get a better view, I see people walking back and forth in front of an automobile circling it, and inasmuch as that's an oil fire, as I told you before, they can't do much with it. They can't get near it. It's so hot. And I'm going to stand by for another few minutes until I get accurate data to give you. So just stand by. I'll be back with you. I'm back again, ladies and gentlemen, with more information about this terrible disaster down Lakehurst, New Jersey, in which the Hindenburg crashed while being moored at the mooring mast. Three children have been saved. Three children were brought over just for the excitement of the trip, and we're going to be taking back three children by the name of Daner, D-O-E-H-N-E-R, three children by the name of Daner. There was also a radio officer. One of the radio jumped through the glass. They had breakable glass in all the windows. Naturally, they would have at that altitude and flying up where it wouldn't hit anything. And he managed to jump, to kick his way out through the deck onto the sand. Now, I figure that there was about 60 feet, a 60-foot drop from the ship. The tail went up in the air, and as I told you on previous occasions, that it held up there long enough for them to jump from the cabin. Now, his name, this radio officer's name, is Schweikard. S-C-H-W-E-I-K-A-R-D. And all I could understand him to say was that he jumped, and evidently was thrown, too, at the same time because the ship was vibrating. There were three distinct explosions, if I remember correctly. I'll have to check back in the earlier page. The tail surface, then the center section, and then the nose of it destroyed. It's still burning, and I imagine it's now 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. Did you get that? 7:30. And the plane is still burning, or rather the dirigible is still burning, and I think that, if I'm not mistaken, it has been burning an hour. Am I right in that, Charlie? Just about 1 hour. Because it had stopped raining, and they were coming in for this landing and mooring. We have not yet been able to find out what caused the explosion, but it's very evident that there was a spark, 50 nitrogen, on fire. There wasn't any electricity. There was no electrical storm. It was raining previously to that, but no electricity could have set it on fire unless it was static electricity, because we had had a thunderstorm, a very light thunderstorm, but there was a lot of electricity in the air, so maybe a spark jumped from one of the beams in the tail surfaces across. That would be a logical interpretation of it. Inasmuch as they were coming in close proximity to the ground, the static electricity may have increased and caused an explosion like that. Now, we're trying to get more information, and between these broadcasts, we're doing all we can to help the people who are injured. We have most of the living ones in here, back in the back part. That is the Hindenburg office, back part of the hangar. They're here. I can't understand half of them. We have an interpreter, and we're getting as much information as we can. Now, Mr. Byrne from the Chicago office, and Mr. Reinstrom from the Chicago offices of the American Airlines, that's right, Charlie, American Airlines office, have just came out of the radio room, which is to my back here, for all of the available stewardesses who are on call at Newark to rush by the plane that took the injured people to Newark and bring them back to Lakehurst. Now, just as they are so accurate what they have done, they have established a directional beam that will guide the ships in here at any hour. Now these ships can leave Newark and find the field, although from the sky they could see the burning wreckage and it would be easy to find, but they can come in here and land, be guided in here and land with their landing lights. So we're expecting a plane load of stewardesses. They're all registered nurses, and they'll be in here very shortly. Now, Commander Rosendahl is over in the main part, over in the lighter-than-air hangar, which is just slightly longer than the Hindenburg. And they have established an emergency hospital base there. They pull tables together, and it houses three blimps in there. Now, whether they're taking any of them out to make available room for hospitalization, I do not know, but I will find out and come back later. All right, Charlie, if you'll fade it out, I'll be back in a second. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again with another flash. I want to tell you that Nelson Morse of Chicago, Nelson Morse, a very well-known Chicagoan on board, is saved. He's safe. We were talking to him, one of the men here, and he is okay. Now, in giving you these names, these German names, such as Dehner and Schweikard and so forth, those are the names the German people have given to me, and being unable to understand the individual person, I'm giving the name as it sounded to me. Now, that is just exactly what is happening. The wreckage is still burning, and we're waiting for a plane to come in, with supplies and so forth, and emergency first aid apparatus. And as the events occur, I'm going to come in on this and tell you about it. So just stand by a few minutes, and I'll have more information for you. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're back again now. It's 8:15. We're terribly upset about this all. The fire is still burning. Just a little bit now. It's an oil fire, and it's a bad one to fight. We have one of the stewardesses as from the ships of the American Airlines, one of the flagships, which came in this afternoon to meet the Hindenburg when it landed. What is your name?
Miss Tyler.
Miss Tyler. Miss Tyler, would you tell me where you've been over? You've been over in the lighter-than-air building, haven't you?
I've been over in the hospital.
Will you go ahead and tell them about it, being over in the hospital?
I've been over in the hospital and seen this terrible calamity over there.
And you're a registered nurse, and have you been working and helping get them out?
Yes.
How many do you have over there, do you know?
Oh, I don't have any idea how many, but it's just an awful lot over there.
Do you think there are 25 or 30?
Oh, there's more than that.
Oh, are they? All right, I won't make you talk anymore. Well, thank you very much, because this is for future records, and anyone that we can get that will give us information on it will certainly appreciate it, and I want to thank you very much. Now, friends, we've just received word that the American Airlines planes are going to be in here in just a very few minutes with all the available registered nurses of their stewardesses at Newark. We're very short of doctors, however. According to the report, the medical doctors of the staff here at Lakehurst, the Navy men and that are stationed here, are working frantically, doing their best with these nurses who are trained, of course, to the nth degree. They're all registered nurses. They're doing their part in alleviating suffering. Now, as this young lady told you, we don't know how many are over in the lighter-than-aircraft, which houses the Los Angeles. Ships are coming in and out constantly here at the field. They have fixed up an emergency lighting system. Of course, they have the floodlights, but there's an emergency oil fire pot system worked out, and in the American Airlines, of course, has their direction beam into Lakehurst so that the American airliners are landing here with their crews and the nurses and doctors and medical supplies. Now, we have just received information that Mr. Lehman, rather Captain Lehman, and Captain Pruce, both of them commanding officers of the lighter-than-aircraft of the Hindenburg and the sister ships that they were going to construct over there. And we have received information that they were saved, and there's another member of the crew, I couldn't get his name, but they were saved and they're in the hospital. Now, there's one of the men just walked in here for first aid, which we gave him. His hands, his arms burned, the back of his neck, and the explosion had blown the tops of his shoes off back to the heels. They were just sticking on by laces, and a little bit of the felt covering of the soles of the shoes still still on his feet. His socks weren't burnt off or anything, just the front toes of his shoes. The heels and the soles are intact. Now that is very strange, showing the terrific force of the explosion as he jumped through the window. And if the sand hadn't been heavy, outside, underneath where the dirigible was coming into land to be moored to the mast there, none of them would have been saved. Now, of course, they have 42 Navy men frantically searching among the debris down there, which is smoldering now, and every once in a while shooting up a bright flame and sparks, searching to see if they can get any further survivors. Now, these three boys that I told you about have left. Now, there was a slight explosion in the back end of the ship now, and I see flames flying up again, evidently some of the oil supply. And we're going to try and get some pictures, but I've covered everything with the pictures for records, for official records. We're still in the United States Navy aeronautical hangar, the heavier-than-aircraft hangar. There are three planes here. We have the customs officer and all his crew working on the men, the wounded people, and they've stretched out the tables out there and made sort of an emergency cot system for them. The United States Government Post Office is turned over their force to cooperate with the nurses in taking the injured to these tables. All of the government services have been trained to the nth degree. I find that they're steady under the greatest stress. They're calm, reserved, going about their business in an orderly fashion and doing more, perhaps, they and the American Airlines nurses than any other unit I've ever seen, regardless of any place in an emergency act. And they certainly are doing a remarkable job. And I'm going to come back in just a few minutes with another bulletin. It's now 20 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, and it's almost 2 hours, now get this, it's almost 2 hours since the explosion. The explosion occurred at 6:32 Central, Eastern Standard Time, 6:32 Eastern Standard Time, and it is now 8:20 and a half. Almost 2 hours, and there's still spasmodic explosions from the oil in the back part of the dirigible. I'll be back just as soon as I have more information for you. Okay, Charlie.
Back at the flight, ladies and gentlemen, the young stewardess to whom I talked a few minutes ago and who said she would rather not talk has composed herself now. She just came from a trying ordeal over in the lighter-than-aircraft hangar, and she tells me that there are between 40 and 60 alive over there. Between 40 and 60 in the neighborhood of that many. Now, she said that some of them have died since they were brought in, and that others are expected to die, but not so many, that some of them have never even been scratched, just their hair singed and eyebrow singed. Now, if there's any more confirmation on the fact of the 40 to 60 alive, I will come in again and give it to you. We were trying to send someone over there, but the lines are so strict that if we once leave the air hangar here, we will be unable to get back in. So we have to stick to our post here and take the people as they come in to report to the German office and be checked in as alive or report someone who has died. Of course, the American Airway Express and all of the people are sending cars out. They're cooperating with the American Airlines in doing this, and everybody's doing his utmost to bring about the easiest end to this terrific tragedy that we've had. Now, I'll be back to the flash later.